Welcome, Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast, by the Lions fans, for the Lions fans. Lions fans this, Lions fans that. Detroit Lions, it's what the podcast is about. PODcast is all about at Pride of Detroit on Twitter, prideofdetroit.com. I've screwed it up already. Pride of Detroit on Facebook, brought to you by SB Nation and Tiki Brand Products.
Why? Way off. Why are you doing this? It's Victory Monday. The Africa is playing, and you're going to start this podcast off like that?
I'm not. Hold up. Ryan, let's get. That's Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader at Detroit Online. I'm Chris Lemieux, the adequate host at Adequate Host. I need to get a counterweight in here. Ryan Matthews. At Ryan underscore POD. Rock God, we need your opinion in here. Does a preseason victory really qualify for Africa?
I think whenever the Lions win should be reason and case enough for us to play Africa as loud as we can.
Woo!
Okay. I'm sorry. That's just my ruling. I'm sorry.
No. That's fine. This is democracy, and I totally respect that ruling.
Oh. Good on you, Chris.
Okay, we're already off the rails here. It is Sunday evening on the East Coast as we record this. The Lions have wrapped up a thrilling victory in the great city of Indianapolis, which everyone is trying to get to, 24-10. And Matt Stafford played, as I said, as I paraphrased from the drill tweet, precisely one drive, then went off to pound some brews. Two out of three with a pick. That's your Stafford line for this week. So who wants to sign him? I'm only half joking there.
You should be 100% joking. Stafford was fine. The interception wasn't even his fault.
Defending an obvious joke. Oh my. I can't keep.
Because we need to actually talk about the Lions right now. There's a game. We just watched a game, or at least one of us watched a game.
I watched the game. I watched a quarter and a half. That's before they put the third string in. Look, when Brad Kaya came onto the field, I knew it was time to be done.
Yeah, he didn't come on until halfway through the third. So you're a liar.
Okay, whatever. Then I've seen enough of Rake Judok.
And when Jeremy says that only one of us watched the game, I watched a game, but it was my golf game, and it crumbled in front of my eyes this weekend. So I got to do some deep soul searching, maybe find whatever type of Xanax Tiger Woods was popping. But I'm here, and I'm filled with questions. I'm filled with questions about the Lions' first preseason game against the Indianapolis Colts, and I have four of them. And okay, I would like...
Let's leave with this. Yeah.
Perfect. So, from not watching the game at all, and very rarely checking Twitter as my golf game just came apart at the seams, there were four things that I really keyed in on from either discussions that other people were having on the course, or once I got back to the clubhouse and ate a very subpar dinner for a golf outing, was hearing in discussions amongst the people. And the first one was that Stafford, as Chris mentioned, threw an interception, and Jeremy downplayed it as not his fault. But first of all, how much money should it cost him in contract negotiations? And number two, what did we glean, if anything, from the first team offense on their first drive?
I think Stafford should pay the Lions now, to be honest, for the privilege of playing.
That's a good idea in theory, Chris, and I wonder if they can work that out.
I do think that's a good point, because like, aren't players just like grateful to be in the NFL? Shouldn't they be the one that they're paying?
Pride and duty to your country.
They're playing a kid's game.
I don't think I'm qualified to talk about that because I didn't play professional ball.
Okay, we're going to get to like full on some deeper stuff later, but I do like this game we're playing with Ryan. So, I mean, let's talk about that interception. Like, I don't know. I don't think all of it was on Marvin Jones, but I'm not also going to sit here and nitpick what was basically a tipped pass into the air and just came down in a Colts player's hand.
I was going to say, Jeremy, you're not qualified to talk about the troops, but you are qualified to talk about this game. So
it was very much so.
It was essentially a perfectly placed pass. It probably had a little too much heat behind it. And when you do that, when it's kind of a high pass, you're going to get tipped up balls. And balls that get tipped up like that are going to get intercepted like 90% of the time. So, you know, if we're playing the blame game, which why are we doing this? Because it's preseason football and Stafford is fine. But I would go like 90-10 in Marvin Jones' favor. Like he should have at the very least like stuck it and not just had it bounce immediately off his hands.
All right, next up, what's your next point you got here, Ryan?
So this may have been the first thing I heard about the Lions game, which originally my plan was to go completely silent. I like muted everything that was Lions talk on Twitter. I pretty much stayed away from my phone in general. I was trying to go blackout on everything and trying to come and watch the game before we did this podcast, but that was a futile effort. The first thing that broke that silence was the Kerry Hyder injury. And with Kerry Hyder's injury, the Lions were already so completely thin at defensive end. What does the team do now?
That, I mean, that's the biggest question to come out of this game, I think. It was, like you said, maybe the biggest concern on this team as is, and now the person who had the most sacks on this team last year is likely gone for the year. If, you know, if somehow our listeners haven't heard yet, Jim Caldwell said after the game, it's a significant Achilles injury. And anyone who knows Achilles injuries in the NFL, a significant one is not only usually a season ender, but that's like a, that's, I was talking with Kent, that's occasionally like a 12 month injury recovery. So we're talking maybe even the beginning of this 2018 season being in jeopardy. So yeah, the Lions are left in a lurch here, and there were some promising signs towards the end of the game, but then you're talking about performances that have about six asterisks by it. So you're talking about like Jeremiah Valoaga and Alex Barrett, who both had a sack, who both led the team with six tackles, played really well, very well. But the asterisk being, one, this is not a very good Colts team. Two, this is not a very good Colts defense. Three, this is third and fourth stringers. And four, I mean, this is preseason. Everything is simplest. It's very simplistic on both sides of the ball. You just can't draw too many conclusions. And if you're really like crossing your fingers and hoping that this defensive line is going to be saved by two undrafted rookies, you're probably putting your hopes into a pipe dream.
And more to the point too, just this I'm in the French is going to come out here, but this fucking sucks for Kerry Hyder.
Yeah.
Like my thoughts aren't even with the team. Like I knew this line was going to be ass. And I mean, Jeremy, we were even, I think, I can't remember if it was you or Ryan, someone in here was like, yeah, I'm not going to expecting the same out of Kerry Hyder come next year. I forget who it was, but you know, we're not here to place blame, but like, this guy fought up from, I mean, practice squad shit.
Yeah.
Practice squad with the Lions. I think he was kind of in that same situation with the Saints. I don't remember. Either way, he kind of fell out from New Orleans before coming here. Like he had fought himself to, as you say, he led the team in sacks. Not a great exact distinction, because that's, I mean, this was the Lions. They weren't really doing much of anything. We can talk about cherry picking all you want, but he did that. He had that going for him. And it's all blown to hell. And he might, and like Achilles, as you say, they're tricky. He might not come back. He might not even be on the roster after a while, just because this fucking game is just cruel and unusual with how we do contracts.
Yeah. So, and I mean, he's on a 1 year contract too. So I believe he comes in equal or ERFA next season. So it's a very easy re-sign for the Lions. But at the same time, like Achilles injuries potentially can be career ending. So, this is horrible, and it couldn't have happened to a better person. Like you said, not only is it like a great underdog story, but this is one of the most well-liked guys in the Lions locker room. I think
the team was like around them. Like Anthony Zettel was talking about, he was trying not to throw up when he heard about this.
Yeah.
Like this is one of theirs.
So the second part of this question that's real short is, do you think the Lions are going to try to add a veteran guy this late in camp, this late to the, you know, preseason now, right? But is it either going to be a veteran guy they go out and try to sign? Do they try to facilitate a trade? I mean, what do you think? I mean, do they move Brandon Copeland from being a linebacker to strictly playing defensive end? I mean, is the answer in house? Jeremy mentioned it's probably unlikely that you're going to rely on either two, you know, undrafted free agents to fill that spot. But like, what do the Lions do now?
I mean,
like, what's your gut feeling?
I feel like they have to make some sort of move. To your question about Brandon Copeland, here's a spoiler for you. He got injured too.
Oh, all right. Let's not try to ruin everything. Okay.
It appeared to be a less serious injury. I didn't actually see it happen, and I was watching the Colts broadcast of it, so they never even talked about it. But he went off with a shoulder injury. He was questionable to return, but by then it was already the third or fourth quarter, and he wasn't going to come back anyways. So, not as serious. So I think we'll see Brandon Copeland. I think he's essentially locked into a roster spot now. But to your larger point, the Lions are going to have to do something. And, you know, this was kind of a crazy week in the NFL with a bunch of big news with Sammy Watkins getting traded. And
that was insane. That was weird.
But I wouldn't be surprised to see the Lions go out and try to do something like that. I know fans are looking at the waiver wire and they're like, ooh, Jared Odrick, Mario Williams, Dwight Freeney. Those guys are not signed at this point in the offseason for a reason. They're old and they're not that good.
We got to move on here. Ryan, number three.
Okay, number three. But first, real quick, Tamba Ali, trade for him. Okay, number three. Jesus. Here we go. Hype train, full steam ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Is Kenny Golladay more of a lock for the Hall of Fame than Mitch Trubisky is at this point in their careers? Or is it kind of like equal footing?
Well, I think what's going to happen is we're going to let Stafford walk and trade for Trubisky. They're going to go in together.
That was the biggest piece of heresy ever recorded on this podcast.
Well, you know, they're going to talk during the Pro Bowl this year, both of those guys, and maybe they're going to like do some insider trading type business. And yeah, maybe they are on the same team next year. But I mean, can we
not,
like,
this is not where I wanted this question to go at all.
Let's get back to Kenny Golladay himself, who, I mean, man,
I can't wait for you to see these touchdowns, Ryan. It's not like they were spectacular catches, but they were difficult catches.
Like Jake Rudock was throwing to him. Yeah, like
that's a great qualifier. It's like these weren't like great catches, but they probably were because we got to think about the guy whose arm they came from. Like the point of origin is a huge distinction.
One of them, I thought for certain, I looked at that and it was underthrown, and it was Galladay's hands were going down to try to make like a basket catch, and I'm like, oh, okay, fine. This is an incompletion. This is going to hit, you know, between the ground between his legs, painlessly or whatever. It's no big deal. And all of a sudden, I was like, holy crap, he has it! He has it!
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, he can find the ball so well, and like all three of his catches were very contested. There was someone right there, and he was able to adjust his body, kind of use it against the cornerbacks and find it and grab it and hold on to it, for Christ's sake, which is something that we haven't had out of a big guy since Calvin. And so,
yeah, no, he is in that mold. Like, he can go up and fight with the guy on him. And this is only year one for him. So, like, it was fantastic to see that out there.
You're going to see him get tossed so many 50-50 balls in his career, and he's going to find that separation. Like, he's going to have the cornerback's back turned, and he's going to be able to, you know, reach over him, draw pass interference. Like, his first touchdown absolutely should have been pass interference, and it wasn't called. But that's what you're going to see out of him, is someone who separates at that last second, maybe with like kind of a, you know, under the radar push off. I don't think he had any of those today, but I've seen, you know, highlights of him doing that in camp. But I'm very excited for this guy. I really tried to hold back on the hype train, especially since I personally hadn't seen him play at all. And I kind of downplay all the training camp fodder and rookie mini camp fodder. But like, we're talking about three receptions, and I understand that as well. But he looks the part for an NFL wide receiver in a way that I haven't seen from a rookie on this team in a very long time. And this team has drafted a lot of wide receivers since Calvin, and none of them have really worked out. This is a guy who I'm fairly certain is going to work out.
And to be fair, like you say, three receptions, but no one really had a lot of receptions today. Like Michael Roberts, I see, had the most targets and it was only 6 targets. He caught 4 of them. Like Kenny caught nearly everything that was thrown his way. And I think that's all you can ask for at this stage.
So real quick, Jeremy, has Kenny and I, like we need to be saying, we always need to preface it. It's the first preseason game and it's 3 catches, but based on everything in rookie minicamp and OTAs and then training camp, has Kenny Golladay proven to you that he deserves a role? I don't want to say significant role, but he deserves a role with the first team offense.
In the regular season?
Yes.
I'll go as far as say I think he deserves a significant role. I'll say it. I was wrong.
Double down, baby! Double down! Put it on!
I was wrong a week ago. I said that Eric Ebron was going to be the third wide receiver of this team. I think Kenny Golladay has made his case already that he should be getting, you know, I would say almost 50% of the snaps on offense right now.
So my argument about Tate not moving to the slot is going to get blown up, so that's going to be great. You guys are already giving me a ton of shit for that slack.
Well, you know, you wouldn't be adequate if it wasn't for that. Question number 4, yeah, real quick, before we get out of here.
We got 2 minutes.
PFF said he was the second best player on offense for the Lions today. Was Greg Robinson as good as advertised at left tackle?
Well, he was not advertised very well going into this game. So yes to that. If you're saying, is he as good as PFF says he was?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Was he as good as being the second highest rated player? Like, was he the second best offensive player you saw on the field today for the Lions?
Well, that's a hard question to answer because he played for a full half and like Amir Abdullah played for 5 snaps. And by the way, Amir Abdullah, his first touch the day already got me excited, even though it was just like a 12-yard catch. But if we're talking about Greg Robinson, this is an important point to talk about. He certainly outperformed expectations. I'm going to do a deep dive on him tonight and probably put out something tomorrow morning. There were some concerns. There were a couple times there was like a running play. I think it was the Zach Zenner 20-yard run right in the beginning of the first quarter where he got beat inside and really should have been called for a holding penalty. And those are the kind of holding penalties that if they're called really stick out, you know, they erase a 20-yard gain. So if that were to have been called, I think we all would have had a much different, opinion on how his day went. So I think it was more of a mixed bag than probably PFF is leading on. But that being said, he certainly still very much exceeded expectations. And if you were to tell me that his first, like when the Lions first traded for him, if you were to tell me he would have played like he did on Sunday in his first preseason game with the Lions, I would have taken that 10 times out of 10. I was very happy with what I saw out of him this early in his Lions career.
Well, thank you for answering all the questions. I don't even need to watch the game now, guys.
Well, we're going to keep talking more about this game. When we come back here, we're going to take a quick timeout. More from the preseason game coming up here on the Pride of Detroit PODcast. Right, a Detroit podcast rolls along. Next game we're going to play, Impress Depress. I'm not sure who came up with this name. Actually, I do. It's Jeremy, and it sucks. But
that's how you know it's mine.
Well, I'm now dealing with the fact that I tweaked something during the break, and now my headphones are like falling apart. So I'm like holding them up to my ear right now.
You tore the Achilles of your headphones.
Pretty much. Like these were $200 headphones, and 2 years later, they are completely dead. I need to find something else that are going to be good.
Anyway, it costs you like $100 a year. That's quick math.
Yeah, and I mean, half of this is because my buddy was irresponsible with them, but that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about the Lions. Let's not talk about my headphones. Why are we talking about my headphones? Oh, right, I brought it up. Right.
Adequate.
Anyway, Impress, Depress. So I think each of us are going to have like a name of someone who impressed us and someone who did not impress us or let us down. I think that's probably the way we want to go here. There's still a lot of names we have to talk about. And I've got like 3 different names I really want to talk about. So I don't know who wants someone else go first, just so I don't overlap.
All right. Impress. Let's start with Jake mother flipping Rudock.
God,
I'm being serious here. Like I was with you guys last year in that Jake Rudock was awful. no good. And the people that were like, oh man, he was 13 of 17. That's really good. Like, he should be the backup behind Orlovsky. I was with you guys, right? That Orlovsky should have been the backup last year. Rudock shouldn't have made the original roster. He didn't. All that was true last year. He looked like a much different quarterback today. I'm sorry. He did. He was much more poised. They asked him to do a heck of a lot more than they did last preseason. And he rose to the challenge. 13 of 21, 142 yards, 2 touchdowns. He wasn't great. He wasn't amazing. He wasn't perfectly accurate, but he looked like someone who could manage the game if the Lions absolutely needed him to. And that to me is a huge relief. And I'm not ever going to stand here and say that he should be, you know, that Stafford should be pulled and Jake Rudock should be put in the game. That's, you're never going to hear those words out of my mouth ever. I can promise you that. But I say them for once, I feel at least mildly comfortable with Jake Rudock as the backup quarterback for this team. And that's something I definitely couldn't say 24 hours ago.
I just watched the highlights of Kenny Galladay's 2 touchdowns. And I will say that the first touchdown was an awful throw by Jake Rudock. The second throw was much better. But
I'll agree on both those terms. Awful might be a little overstating it, though.
Ooh, it was really bad. That was not where that ball should be thrown at all whatsoever. I mean, I'm still really concerned about Jake's arm strength. That's something like, I guess how I'll answer these questions. I'll answer these questions in a very specific way, but I'll take this stuff kind of like back to the lab and watch the game and see if I agree or disagree with it. But I mean, let me throw a question back to you about Jake Rudock then. Like, what you said his poise impressed you, but like the things that really bothered me about Jake was that it just didn't seem like he had an NFL arm. Like, it doesn't seem like he has the type of zip on his ball. Like, were there any throws that he made that like impressed you, or was it just his ability to kind of, I guess, run the offense? Like, you mentioned how he like was asked to do more. Like, did that impress you, or was there anything like physical about his game that impressed you?
It's definitely more on the management side, but I think that second touchdown pass he threw to Galladay was very good. And I mean, you saw him last year, right? Like, they didn't ever ask him to throw it more than 10 yards down the field.
And I'm wondering if all of a sudden he has like the arm strength to do that, because he didn't show it in camp whatsoever.
Right.
So,
and I mean, he's never going to have complete NFL strength, but I think he proved today that he can get by without it. And I mean, you put him with NFL talent at the wide receiver positions like a Kenny Galladay, and I think he can make it work in a pinch. Like I said, this is never going to grow up to be, you know, the Matthew Stafford arm where he can make all of the passes. No, I mean, that's just never going to happen. But he was much more comfortable out there, and I know I'm kind of repeating myself at this point, but that's to me the big difference, is that he's out there making the right reads, managing the pocket well, escaping the pocket when he needs to be. He probably could have hung in the pocket a little bit more, but you know, I think he had about 25 rushing yards too. And both were for first downs, both made a lot of sense. And I think the most impressive play he made, it actually turned out to be an incompletion, but it was a play right before the Lions kicked a field goal. He was creating more and more time towards the sideline, drifting towards the sideline right by the goal line. He found Matt Asiata at the very last second. Unfortunately, Asiata had just barely stepped out of bounds before he caught it, but it would have been a huge third down pickup, would have been first and goal from the two, and the Lions likely would have scored a touchdown. And he did all he could on that play, and it was very impressive to me.
So what you're saying is the Lions could trade him to the Jets for a second round pick next year.
Trade him to a defensive end.
Right now.
Right now. I would be into that. And then go pick up Kaepernick to back up.
Yeah, I'll take Sheldon Richardson. It seems like he doesn't get along with Todd Bowles right now for all the comments he's made about Brandon Marshall. So I'll take him.
All right, deal.
I want to talk about, see, the problem is now I've got three guys who impressed me. So just real quick, I'm going to say his name. He's not the man I'm going to say, but Redfern.
Casey Redfern. Yeah.
Yeah. Casey Redfern. Man, you were nailing some coffins. You were nailing coffins in there today, son. You're not going to stay on this team because we've got Sam Martin, but I hope someone picks you up because you deserve to be on an NFL roster the way you're kicking. Like, what he had like a 53 yarder or something.
He had a 61 yard punt, eight punts, four of them that ended up inside the 20, averaged almost 50 yards per punt.
Wow.
And there was some hang time on some of those kicks too. Like that, I'm 100% with you on this one. He shocked me because I thought I had heard really awful things about him in training. He showed up to play for a punter.
Is he more deserving of an NFL roster spot than Roberto Aguayo?
Well, guess who got signed to Chicago?
Don't even tell me.
Roberto.
Anyway, no, I'm 50-50 on who I want to give this game ball to, because one of them, I expected this from him. I expected him to take this next leap, and he was playing like a man among boys out there. And the other, I did not expect as much. Let's go to the first one. A'shaun Robinson.
He is a man among boys.
A SWAT. The SWAT team. My large adult son, A'shaun Robinson. Just creating havoc on like nearly every play when he was in the game.
I think I saw something from PFF. He had like 12 plays where he was rushing the passer.
11. I saw this graphic.
Yeah, and he had two quarterback hurries and two batted passes.
Yep. Yep.
So he made plays on nearly half.
Yeah.
Over a third of his pass rushing plays.
Now, granted, this is against the Colts line. And which we know quite, yeah, it is ass. But I mean, if there's any, this is only year two for A'shaun. This is only year two. And this guy is just like, for what he lacks in the pass, in creating pressure in the passing situations, he makes up for it. If you try to throw his way, he will knock it down.
And that's something like,
yeah, he just eats the run. Yeah.
It's something that for whatever reason, I just kind of passed off as fluky for his rookie year, that he led all defensive tackles with passes defended. Like, yeah, I mean, it was only like five or six, so that doesn't mean that's like his game. But like, forgive me for overreacting for the second time to one preseason game. But like, yeah, I guess that's his thing, and I couldn't be happier for it, because if the Lions aren't going to get pressure, at least knock the ball down. And if that's what A'shaun can do and bring to this defensive line, I'm in. I'm excited.
And I'm sorry, I know I'm eating up all this space now, but the other guy on the defensive line I was impressed with, and who I wasn't expecting as much from, even though I said to keep an eye on him when I was talking with Stampede Blue, my other large adult son, Anthony Zettel.
Mm-hmm.
Who, I mean, there were a couple of plays where he like blew past the runner every now and then, but he got back there and he made tackles for loss. And I think, did he have... He wasn't credited with the sack, I think, but he like created pressure that led to the sack, I believe. Like, okay, yeah, I'm seeing he has a quarterback hit. Yeah.
Yeah, he only had one tackle on the day, but like you said, his impact was well beyond the stat sheet. He was definitely creating a lot of pressure while Lions fans were mid panic about Kerry Hyder. Like, immediately Zettel goes out there and like gets two or three pressures. And so That's certainly promising, because now it looks like there's a small chance Anthony Zettel is going to be your starting defensive end opposite Ezekiel Ansah.
Which would be very grim. But
yeah. I mean, that's all kind of question mark depending on Cornelius Washington.
Kind of got to figure out where Brandon Copeland's going to fit on this roster now, too. He's kind of
exactly
back in the scene. You know, he's able to do that defensive end outside linebacker dual role, which, I mean, linebacker still needs some help. Gerard Davis, we haven't talked about him at all, but he looks decent out there on the day.
Yeah, he didn't get a ton of time out there today, but he was in good coverage on the first third down of the game. Incomplete pass. It, with a better quarterback, it may have been completed, but... I think he only had one or two tackles on the day, so jury's still very much out on Jared Davis. But let me get to a couple people that disappointed, because it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows. And both these are going to hurt us, because they're some of our favorite players, I think. And the first one is Michael Roberts. Had a really bad drop in this game. Had two fumbles, one lost, another one out of bounds. And Al Golden got in his face after the second one, and this apparently has been an issue with him throughout all of training camp. Obviously, I haven't had a chance to see that firsthand, but drops and fumbles are something that I've heard a couple times out of some of the beat writers, and I was hoping that was more of just like you only notice it because it's something that, you know, turns heads, or you notice more mistakes than you do good plays in general. And so I was hoping maybe that was an instance of that, but Michael Roberts, not really a good start, even though he led the team with four catches.
Well, you want me to get to one before, in case you blow mine up?
Sure.
I've got one guy here. Okay. I can't do this with Paul Warlow. I know his stat line looks good, but he's probably going to have a space on this roster because he's going to fill in where we are insanely thin when it comes to linebacker, but I can't buy this. I'm sorry. I can't buy Paul Warlow.
Here's the thing on Warlow. There was one play specifically, and I think it was a screen play where he looked lost. He looked like the reason he's nearly out of the league is because he's become senile and doesn't know where he is. To be honest, I'm taking most of this from Kent because I was way too busy today to be paying this much attention to special teams. He said Warlow looked really, really good on special teams, and I think I saw that he picked up at least one, maybe two tackles on special teams. And fingers crossed, that's going to be his role in 2017, is special teams essentially only. And if that's the case, then kudos to him. But I think if he's there on defense, then yeah, there is some reason for concern.
Man, if 27 is senile, what does that say about us, Jeremy?
Well, we're not the ones getting ourselves concussed every day. At least I'm not.
Okay. Who was the other person? Did I take the other person you were disappointed with?
No, another. Okay. We don't have a special relationship with Paul Warlow, as you can tell, because I just called him senile. Jace Billingsley.
This is a tough one.
He was okay there on offense, caught in two passes for 30 yards. One of those was a very nice yak. But he was out there for the majority of the punt returns, and aside from one very late one, he was not good at it. He was straight up bad at it.
Four punt returns averaging 4 yards per return.
Yeah, four returns for 16 yards, and his longest was 15. So what does that tell you? The other three went for a combined 1 yard. And I mean, some of that you're not really expected to get a ton of yards on punt returns
now and then. That's fine. But
these were his fault. He was not looking good on there. And the way Jace Billingsley is going to make this roster, I really thought was going to be through special teams. And unfortunately, we didn't get to see a bunch of Jamal Agnew doing that job. But I think Jamal's probably ahead of him. He was the first one to return a punt, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
and for a team that I still think is only going to carry four wide receivers, I think Billingsley is not only the odd man out, I think he's maybe two or three behind being on the roster right now. And he didn't do any favors for himself in the first game.
Yeah, like the downside of Galladay balling the hell out is basically Jace Billingsley now on the outside, because I think TJ Jones is probably going to be your fourth receiver.
Yeah, he was in there with the ones. He only caught one ball, but it was a big 2-yard gain where he got at least two steps on his defender.
Yeah, just on the basis of veteranmanship, you know, TJ Jones played with the regular season team here. He's the only one of these receivers we're going to talk about who's done that. I know Dontez Ford, he had his touchdown, but everyone else is kind of looking in. The 1-4 in my mind is looking solid unless someone just really has themselves a game here in the next three preseason games.
Yeah, I still certainly think Keyshawn Martin, Jared Aberdares, Jace Billingsley, they're still in contention. But I don't think any of them showed me anything to change my mind of where I am right now with those top four being those top four.
I have a quick depressed one, and I haven't watched the game, and this isn't even a player, so this will be interesting. I'm depressed on Twitter when it came to the lack of Tease Tabor mentions.
Okay.
So like, how did Tease Tabor play today?
He was good-ish. One of the problems is cornerback play is very hard to see from tape.
Yeah, how are we also going to see the cornerback play when it's Scott fucking Tolson,
right?
Dylan Walker and Stephen Morris?
I saw PFF put also one of those little graphics together for Tease, and it was pretty flattering, I think maybe overly so. He was targeted 4 times, gave up 2 receptions for 10 yards, I think. I think the very first play that anyone noticed him out there, he forced an incompletion. It doesn't count as a pass defended, but essentially he was kind of beat by a wide receiver on a comeback route, but the wide receiver had to jump to get the ball, and Tease knocked him out of bounds, essentially, so he couldn't get that second foot in. that's a good play. That's a good example of what. That's a good example of what Tease can do, is that he closes in after being beat very quickly, and can. He's not really a physical guy. He's not a great tackler, although he did have three tackles. And I think it was Kent who said he was surprised a little bit by the way Tease played as a tackler today. But there was nothing else that really stuck out to me. And unfortunately, I don't think we get all 22 after a day or two for preseason games. So we probably won't get to see an in-close look on how Tease did. But early reports are fine. Well, nothing good, nothing bad.
Yeah, even without all 22 film, though, just the fact that you can say there was nothing that stood out about Tease, that's probably a good sign.
Right.
Nothing bad. It's good. Yeah, I guess.
Do we have time for one more disappoint?
I was wanting to get to this. I was wanting to get to a name here, too. So I'll let you do it. And if not, I'll just throw him out. My name out is like the last 2 seconds. Go ahead.
My disappoint is anyone who isn't Greg Robinson and is an offensive tackle that isn't also Rick Wagner. Because one, Cyrus Kwanjo did not play in this game. We don't know why. I believe Burkett asked Caldwell after the game and he did not really get an answer. So what does that say about Kwanjo if he's not even getting snaps? I have no idea. Hopefully it doesn't mean he's injured, because the Lions can't afford any more injuries there. But hopefully it also doesn't mean that he's so deep on this depth chart that he's about to get traded or cut or whatever. But Storm Norton also had a lot of opportunity. He was the one that did take over at left tackle. And he did not look very good, nor did really. This is kind of cheating into another one, but Joe Dahl, I think, probably may have had the worst game of anyone out there. And that's sad to see, because I think a lot of people were hoping that he could eventually develop into a starter, and it's clear he's not ready yet.
Okay, I'm going to get us out of here. Break is right here, but I don't want to see Zach Zenner taking more snaps.
Who's going to be a running back for us?
I don't care.
In the preseason.
Bye. We'll be right back. Ride of Detroit PODcast. It rolls along. It keeps rolling, 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 rolling.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's talk about the rest of the NFL. It's been a long week since we were last back here, exactly 7 days or so. Don't count it. But a lot has changed, as is wont to seem to happen. These news cycles always seem to kick us around, where it's like we record something and then immediately the day after, like, the world blows up. So
in this case, the world blowing up is Jay Cutler getting a job.
Yeah, well, let's start there. Jay Cutler is once again a football player in the NFL, playing for the Miami Dolphins, and he's already said he doesn't need to be in great physical health, which is absolutely true, and I will defend Jay Cutler in that assessment. He does not need to be in great physical health. My guy's eaten more Italian beef than protein bars in the last 5 seasons, and you know what? Even if it was reversed, he'd be the same smoking Jay Cutler.
Wait, if there's ever been any evidence that Chris Lemieux is not a Lions fan, let it be this podcast, because he's already said that he wants Mitch Trubisky on the Lions, and now he's defending Jay motherfucking Cutler.
No, I think Jay Cutler's still an ass quarterback. I'm just saying, even if he was in shape, it wouldn't make much of a difference.
If there was one place Jay Cutler was going to succeed in 2017, maybe it's the Miami Dolphins. I don't know. Like, I mean, he wasn't going to do anything for that Bears locker room. They clearly needed to go in a different direction. Why not try to reunite him with the guy who he maybe had his best season as a Bear under, in Adam Gase? I don't know.
I mean, it's like that's the only logical explanation that they probably have versus, you know, the eternal Kaepernick question now.
But I mean, like, this
made sense. Yeah.
Well, this is the other thing. This is the other thing, too, though, that people need to consider. Jay Cutler is better than any quarterback that's on the New York Jets depth chart. So, but he could have had an NFL job. I mean, there was definitely interest from the Jets in Cutler. So he was willing to come out of retirement for one job and one job only, and it was to play football for the Miami Dolphins. I mean, they were a playoff team last year, but do you think that this puts them, do you think that this keeps them on track to maybe get back there again this year?
No. Jay's going down there to enjoy South Florida. He's going to be a parrot head. He's fine.
That was a quick face turn by Chris Lemieux.
That's because you guys assumed I was a face on him when I absolutely was not.
Well, here comes another turn, because I don't think Jay Cutler is that much of a downgrade from Ryan Tannehill at all.
No, but that's true as well.
And like, so, yeah, if they made the playoffs last year, then yeah, they could certainly do it again. I know they're dealing with other injuries, like Jay Ajayi is still going through concussion protocol, and I think they've had a couple other season-ending injuries over there. I can't say to what specific stuff, but if
Raekwon McMillan, their second-round pick towards ACL, reportedly. They haven't confirmed it, I don't think, but...
But yeah, if you're just talking about their change in quarterbacks, I don't think this lessens their chance to make the playoffs by much, if any.
This kind of can dovetail into another topic, but I mean, they do get to play the Bills twice this year, and they'll definitely beat them, because what are the Bills doing?
Well, you wanted, okay, there were two segues we could have gone here. I wanted to go Trubisky, because our own Robert Zaglinski. Hi, Rob. Is basically losing his mind, but let's jaunt up to Buffalo before we do that, where Sammy Watkins was unceremoniously shipped out of town.
Can we talk about how disrespectful the Buffalo Bills are to Tyrod Taylor and how they don't deserve him whatsoever?
Absolutely not.
They
don't deserve Anquan Boldin either now.
Tyrod Taylor pulled money out of his own pocket to fly Sammy Watkins down and to do like some off-season training with him so that they could, you know, get right for the season. And, you know, Sammy Watkins has been so limited the past two seasons due to injuries that Tyrod Taylor was like, hey man, let's get on the same page. Let's work on our, you know, timing and everything. And then what does Buffalo do? They just decide to pack it in this year and put three slot receivers on their team.
The thing is, I mean, I don't like, this totally came out of nowhere because you're right about the whole Tyrod Taylor thing, because also like 12 hours before he got traded, Tyrod Taylor posted this picture of him and Sammy Watkins and another Bills receiver with like the hashtag, oh, this, we're just getting started, baby.
No, it's just coming to an end.
And God, I was watching that game because they were playing the Vikings, and that's why it was interesting to me. They go to Sammy Watkins the very first three plays of that game, and I'm listening to the Bills announcers during this game like, oh, you can see it, Ken. I almost said Kenny Galladay. I'm so excited about Kenny Galladay. I can't hold it in. Sammy Watkins, you know, this is going to be his year. He's looking great out there. You know, again, he's open. And just 12 hours later, I want to visit these announcers and like cradle their head in my shoulders. Just be like,
are the Bills?
It was a fun 12 hours.
Are the Bills just committed to making their team just not fun? Like they got rid of the Ryan brothers, which, I mean, fair. But you have, like, it's not like they upgraded at coach there. They just got less funny when it comes to their coaches, because that's what Rex Ryan brings you. He brings you some funny shit. And now you've gotten rid of Sammy Watkins, and you'll probably find a way to fuck up Anquan Boldin. You're trying to fuck up Tyrod Taylor. Like, why are you doing... And by the way, they're like... viciously banning all the Bills fans we fell in love with.
Oh, see, you just ruined my theory. I thought maybe they didn't want the team to overshadow Bills Mafia.
No, Bills Mafia, they're cracking down on Bills Mafia too.
Oh, well then, yeah, Bills. Like, Buffalo's already a horrible place in the United States. What are you doing? Why are you just adhering to the awfulness of Buffalo, New York?
This is where someone is going to say, don't throw stones in glass houses. You're talking about Detroit, but I've been to both cities. Detroit's,
I mean, if we're, you know, getting rid of all the jokes here, Buffalo's in a good spot in the future. Not this year.
They're in the AFC East. They are never going to be in a fucking good spot.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know what? Hold on. The thing was, is that I saw a lot of people say, oh, hey, you know, they're stockpiling for 2018. They're getting ready for the future where Tom Brady's not in their division. It's like, well, last time I checked, Bill Belichick is still in the division, so you're going to have to overcome
Tom
that.
Brady, unless I check, Tom Brady isn't retiring in 2018. Yeah.
Didn't he say he wanted to play like another five seasons?
Yeah. All that is true, but two first-round picks next year, two second-round picks, two third-round picks next year.
Yeah, they'll find a way to screw the pooch.
I'm sure they will, but that's a...
yeah. No, still, yeah, it's,
I mean,
yeah.
You could say the same thing about, I don't know, the Cleveland Browns, Ryan.
Easy, relax. Myles Garrett might be the best player in the NFL.
Deshaun Kizer winning touchdown pass.
Hey, Deshaun Kizer looked really good, I thought. Like, understandably, like, my expectations weren't all that high of him to begin with. I thought that they would bring him along rather slowly. But he looked better than Kessler, and he looked better than Osweiler. I mean, those are kind of low bars to set, but I'm just saying he looked better.
I mean, before Brian Kelly kind of ruined him at Notre Dame, he was looking like he had that one season at Notre Dame before Ryan Kelly just shook the confidence out of him, where he was a stud. He was, people were talking like Heisman for him. So
yeah, I mean, he was like regarded, he was regarded as like a very high draft pick after as early as the Texas game, or as late as the Texas game. Speaking of first quarterbacks off the board,
let's
talk about Mitch Trubisky.
Can we just say how much Mitch Trubisky took the wind out of my sails for that game? Because it started out so fun with Mike Glennon throwing a pick six on the very first possession. And then two possessions later, Whitehair sending a shotgun snap way over his head and turning the ball over. And the Bears were down 10-0 very quick in that game.
How much did they give Mike Glennon again?
More than Jay Cutler is getting or would have gotten.
And everything was going according to plan because that looked bad. The only thing that looked like it was good was Leonard Floyd. He got to Trevor Siemian very easily, and that frightened me for Matthew Stafford's future. But, man, then Mark Sanchez came in, and I thought, is Mark Sanchez going to be the starting quarterback of the Chicago Bears in 2017? Because I'm definitely on for that ride. Like, I know that I'm tall enough. I know I'm at least 48 inches to get on this ride, and I will fast pass my way back through the line for more and more. I want a straight injection of Mark Sanchez into my veins because it makes me so happy to see him still in the NFL. And he was the backup quarterback until Mitch Trubisky happened.
The Mitch showed up and Rob Zaglinski lost his damn mind.
All credit to Rob. Like, to be a Bears fan is probably got to be really tough right now. And so you're grasping at any straws, and he prepared himself in this game ahead of time to be protected for whatever happened. We were joking with him in our Slack room. Like, he was saying, you know, hey, if Mark Sanchez looks better than Mike Glennon, it's because he's against 2 and 3s. But then when Mitch Trubisky looks like the best quarterback in the NFL against 3s and 4s, it's because he's the best quarterback in the world.
Dude, and what the biggest qualifier you put on it when he was like, Mitch Trubisky just led a 2-minute offense for a touchdown. Regardless of it being in the preseason, that matters. Like, okay.
What he failed to leave out there was that drive started on the 50-yard line. He got a 20-yard run on it. He got 2 defensive penalties on it. So he essentially threw for 20 yards on a drive. That's it.
I'm looking here. So, yeah, like, you pointed this out, Ryan, to Rob, that if Trubisky played better than Sanchez, I'll remind you, Sanchez played against Denver's first set of backups. And Rob, then I came in and I just did my thing where I just say Rob to him. And then he told me, how's Stafford's contract? Like, he is all kinds of salt right now.
Oh, man. And you know what? Like Jeremy said, I mean, how long is it? How long has it been since the Bears have had a quarterback that instilled actual confidence? Like, I don't even care for how long Jay Cutler was there. Like, I feel like as a Bears fan, there was probably, if I were a Bears fan, like, at no point in time would Jay Cutler ever elicit any type of, like, true confidence. Like, this guy's our Super Bowl quarterback. Like, when I look at Matthew Stafford, I'm like, that guy could win a Super Bowl. At no point in time did I ever look at Jay Cutler and say, that guy could win a Super Bowl.
I want to kind of, again, cut through a little bit of the bullshit here and say that Trubisky's debut was very impressive. It really was.
It was, yeah.
He made some incredible throws, especially on the run, and I know everyone is saying that, but it's totally true. I don't think he could have done much better, and that's great for him. It doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot, but He made some incredible throws that it doesn't matter that it was against bad competition because it was an impressive play by him. I think he can only control so much, right, Jeremy?
He can only go out and do what is put in front of him. So if he gets the third team defense, he has to play against the third team defense, and maybe next week he moves up to two on the depth chart.
Yeah. I think Sanchez is dealing with maybe a concussion right now, so he's already taking two reps this week. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him jump up to two. I think Bears fans probably shouldn't expect him to be the starter week one still. I still don't think that's in the plans. So, you know, they probably have to pump their brakes a little bit on the Trubisky train. But if I was a Bears fan, I would be very excited right now. I don't fail them for being excited.
We really need to get onto the mailbag, but real quick, 10 seconds. Vikings fans, how you feeling today?
Your offensive line is still ass. I don't care if Riley Reiff is waiting in the wings. Your offensive line still ass.
Coming for your ass.
Riley Reiff is not your knight in shining armor to come play left tackle for you. We can tell you that from experience.
We'll be right back. Mail time, hashtag AskPOD. Here we are again with your mail questions before and after the game. But as always, before we start, we read your reviews. You send us in reviews each week. Two a week means that it staves off 20 seconds of wrestling talk, and you basically get to make Jeremy Reisman here, the Fearless Leader, say anything you want within reason, and you help us out. So that's on iTunes. Go look for Pride of Detroit on iTunes. Leave the review there. Jeremy, what do we have this week?
So I teased this last week. There's a theme to both of the reviews I'm going to be reading today. And that's because I put out a call saying with a picture showing that we had 68 reviews so far.
Oh.
And so the first review is by Chris Gibb, and it's entitled Nice.
Oh, Chris Evans. No, I know him. He's on Twitter. Shout out
if that's you. Been a fan of the site for years, but only recently started listening to the podcast. Very entertaining show. The list casts are great. The banter is good, and the host is adequate. Just wish there was more wrestling talk.
Well, if I remember, Chris Gibbons is like he is watching like all of the G1 climax.
So. I don't know what that is. Anyways, number two is from our friend Ty at the Lions in Winter, also now at the Lions Wire. His review is entitled Nice. He says, these guys do a nice job of bringing nice Lions analysis, nice comedy, nice guests, nice rants, and nice list casts. Also, they're really nice guys. Nice, Ty Schalter.
Ty Schalter's a little late to be nice. It's number 70.
It was. He missed out by one, but he did not know that at the time. We appreciate the nice review, Ty.
It's an A-plus effort, Ty. We appreciate you.
All right.
Those are our last two reviews. We don't have any more. We are at 70 reviews.
And guess what's next week?
Ooh-wee!
Besides that, next week is SummerSlam.
So if you guys want to avoid SummerSlam talk, I better get some reviews this week.
Ryan's going to be there.
I'm going to SummerSlam. That's how real it is.
Okay. Anyways, that's gonna be mailbag. Wrestling
talk. We're going to call up Ryan drunk from SummerSlam and just let him talk for 20 seconds.
I'm all about that.
All right. Honestly, that sounds pretty good. Maybe I don't want reviews.
That could literally spawn Super Mario 3 music.
I've got it ready for you whenever, man. Ready whenever. Do we want to start with Lions questions? Or some of the off-topic questions we have. Let's start off-topic. Let's ease it in. We talked a lot of Lions. I want to get a little bit to warm myself up. The main man asks us at Roy for Life, where do you rank Pickle Rick in the list of all-time best Rick and Morty characters?
Okay, that list is so extensive and expansive that I really can't even rank it.
He's not number one, though. People were reacting like Pickle Rick was like, this was the best thing Rick and Morty's ever come up with. It was good. It was very good. But
it was also something that was overly teased ahead of time. Like, we had a year and a half of Rick and Morty.
It felt like this was just meme.
Drought. And Pickle Rick was like one of the few things that was leaked ahead of time, at least a little bit. And so I left a little underwhelmed, I'm not going to lie. But I mean, that violin got very, very, very graphic.
Yeah.
Graphic and dark. And I mean, the action sequences were great. I don't think the concept was that funny. I don't think the show has honestly been that funny this season. And let me be clear, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think the show hits the serious points just as strongly as it does hit its comedy.
I think the first two episodes have been really solid. I thought they've been great, including,
I do too,
as we were talking about in episode two, technically the season premiere outside of the teaser, you know, what were you talking about with Jerry and the howling wind?
Yes.
Loser. Pickle Rick definitely set Twitter on fire, but I don't think Pickle Rick's a better character than Greg.
No.
I think that episode was probably the worst of the season so far.
I mean, the first two was really hard to match up against, though.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, it was weaker, but like even like their weak stuff is always like a B.
Yes. And yeah, I say worst with quotation marks.
Sure, you know what? You know what? I'm putting someone above Pickle Rick. I'm putting Jaguar above Pickle Rick. That was the big reveal for me in this episode.
Danny Trejo, right?
Yeah, man.
I mean, yeah. Let's pump the brakes on Pickle Rick and let's keep him in perspective.
I mean, Susan Sarandon was in that episode, for Christ's sake. Can we talk about that? Talking about getting people to stop eating poop. That character was amazing.
Why was there not a Greg cameo? There should have been a Greg. It's a court order. You can't eat shit, Greg.
It's on again here in like half an hour or so. So we're going to try to get this mailbag out soon. All right. John Whitaker asks us, who will be the first head coach fired this season?
Ooh, this is a good question that
I wish I had put more thought into this. Yeah.
I feel like I have an answer, but I'm not sure. Because Jeff Fisher isn't a coach anymore, right?
No, he is most certainly not a coach anymore.
He was routinely my scapegoat. Jeremy, do you have an answer?
I'm not sure I do. I feel like I just have to like throw a team name out there and I might not even know their head coach off the top of my head. Let me just look at who I think is going to have like a super disappointing season. I mean,
you know what? No, I'm taking a look right here. I mean,
oh, you know what? I got my answer. And
I have my answer too.
Okay. Okay. Let's hear this because, all right, you know what? You guys go first. I've got a couple in my back pocket.
Cincinnati, get ready to finally throw that party you've been waiting to throw.
Oh, that's bold, man.
Marvin Lewis, get out of town. It's finally over. You're not going to get to the playoffs this year, and Cincinnati's finally going to be fed up.
I don't know, man. I think the Brown family will just keep holding on because it means they don't have to spend money on a new coaching search.
Mine is pretty easy. I'm going to say it's going to be Todd Bowles.
I've got two, and I don't know which is more juicy. Could we maybe see Chuck Pagano thrown under the bus finally?
That's another strong possibility, especially with having a new GM. So,
my other one is just to go with the Washington head coach, Jay Gruden, because that's always – Jay Gruden's had what now? 2-3 seasons as head coach. That's usually about when Dan Snyder decides to fire his head coach.
Which are there any teams that made the playoffs last year that seem like they might have a head coach who might get fired? Because I have one team that I think might make a head coaching change, and I'm not sure if it's going to be the first one to get fired.
I think I've got one too. It might be a really bold one, but go ahead with yours.
Mine's Bill O'Brien.
I can see that. I can see that.
Choice.
I feel like with so many like one and done, or you know, so many like, I feel like there's such high expectations for that team, especially with their defense. And
I'm always fascinated. They're
a quarterback away, but I'm just not sure if that quarterback's on the roster. And if they go 9-7, like, is that going to be enough?
Well, that's the thing. Like you said quarterback, and that was the thing. Like Bill O'Brien came to that team because people saw what he did with Christian Hackenberg at Penn State. And before you laugh about Christian Hackenberg, in that year with Bill O'Brien, he was very good. But like, okay, he's the quarterback whisperer. He's a quarterback coach coming to the head coach. Like, but he hasn't picked out a fucking quarterback in all these years. He's just biding his time, trying to hope no one's noticed he hasn't done the work.
Yeah. His ass well, to the curb. I mean, they moved up and they grabbed Deshaun Watson. So this is his guy officially.
I want to do a really bold off the cuff one. I don't think it'll happen, but although actually, I mean, looking at our own Jim Caldwell, maybe, I don't know, man, if it goes south. Could we see that?
I think I saw Michael Rothstein explain his situation as being lukewarm when it comes to his hot seat.
Yep.
I don't know if I would quite say it's even lukewarm though. I mean, like I would say that Caldwell has to have a pretty catastrophic season to get canned. Like I'm talking like 5-11.
What about if he started out like 2015 again?
I don't think he'll get fired midway through the season. I don't think that they would do that because I don't think that there's anybody on the coaching staff that would be promoted to head coach.
True. The other one I had just on the outside was Mike Tomlin.
No.
He made the AFC championship game last year.
That's true.
What about Jason Garrett?
No,
he's good. He's good. He's a nice little robot that follows all of Jerry Jones's orders. He's fine. What about Sean Payton?
I feel like Sean Payton would quit before he got fired.
That's exactly what I was saying.
You can't fire me. I quit.
He'd be the guy who'd grab the playbook and walk out, and she'd be like, "You're not getting rid of me. I'm getting rid of you."
That's very true. Okay, let's get back to some Lions questions then, since that's
we listed like half of the league.
Right.
Well, can I just say the other half of the league looks incredibly fresh and green. So
that's what you are. You're either Todd Bowles and 3 years deep, or you're fresh faced
Mike Mularkey,
Kyle Shanahan.
You even mentioned John Fox too, which he's kind of on a hot seat too, right?
Oh, he might get fired before week 7.
Right.
Yeah. That's another guy who I can maybe see like quitting before someone gets the chance to fire him, though.
One of those veteran guys.
Yeah.
They do him a solid. Yeah.
All right. Let's go with some Lions questions. Although, actually, I like this one. It's kind of more NFC North. Theoretically asks us, how would the NFC North landscape change if Mitch Trubisky ends up being a Stafford caliber quarterback?
It makes it one of the best divisions in the league, I think. All of a sudden, you have three potentially elite quarterbacks in one division. Has that ever really happened?
It's about to happen in the NFC South this year. I mean, I'm not. I mean, laugh, yeah, but I'm not really kidding.
Yeah, I guess. I guess
Matt Ryan, you could Bruce, argue Cam that Newton.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And Jameis Winston.
Yeah, well, he's not there yet.
I mean, this is the third season. If Winston takes a leap with all of the weapons they put in front of him, adding Deshaun Jackson, getting O.J. Howard, you have Mike Evans there. I mean, Cam Newton is a guy who he led that Carolina team to the Super Bowl. Their defense was incredible, but he was a league MVP. Matt Ryan, clearly.
League MVP?
Yep, and Drew Brees. I mean,
he probably won an MVP too, right?
Somewhere in there, probably, for sure. He won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. But, I mean, it rarely – I feel like it happens way less often than it normally does.
Right.
You could have, like, the bizarro NFC South is the AFC South, where there's one good quarterback when he's healthy and the rest of the league – or the rest of the division was, like, a tire fire.
But, yeah, I mean, you have a quarterback like Stafford that immediately jumps you to playoff contention every year, I think. So, yeah, that would make it I still think it would make it the best division in the NFL, but we're far away from that. Like Trubisky, as good as he was on Thursday, he's not going to be at a Stafford level or any of those, you know, top tier quarterbacks for another 2-3 years. That's just how it works in the NFL.
And I never root for a guy to fail But I would love to see Trubisky fall on his face just to see the spin job that Zaglinski tries to pull on Twitter.
Fuck Zaglinski episode.
That's the title of this episode.
I can't wait to have him on a first bite just to corner his ass.
All right, we got to move. We've done 15 minutes on this, and we haven't.
We fired half the league.
We've done a lot of work, but we still got a lot more to go.
Mike Zimmer, you're next.
Zach Snyder asks us a little late, but is Robert Aguayo a fit?
He'll fit right in with getting his ass owned.
All right, what else do we have here?
He has a spot on the roster right next to Nate Freeze.
Staranka fan asks us, I saw some negative stuff on here about Zettel. Meanwhile, over on ESPN, they love him. Which version should I believe? Now, this question was sent to us around noon on August 11th. So, obviously, I don't know.
Where did the negative stuff from Zettel come from?
I think we all agreed that he was not very good last year.
Oh, no, he didn't play well at all last year.
That was objective, yeah.
And so, I mean, honestly, I didn't have very high expectations for him this year either. He's a sixth round pick. That's, even if he were to improve, it would probably take some more time. So the fact that I thought he had a very good game on Sunday changed my mind very quickly about it, but I still need to see more out of him before I'm like, oh, okay, this guy might be able to actually start. I'm not anywhere near that yet.
Yeah, and he was also a guy who popped in training camp when I went on Tuesday when I was there as media, but like, the other couple times I was there, he practiced with the first team. I know Ezekiel Ansah was out, and normally that would be Kerry Hyder's spot, but we all know where the Lions are with Kerry Hyder now. So Anthony Zettel he's that guy right now.
Okay, we got a couple questions here about TJ Jones. GoldenHawk7 asks us, since TJ sat most of the game, do you think his job is safe? Meanwhile, Michael Dumas asks us, are you up or down on TJ Jones today?
It sounds like Jeremy's up on him, and I'll trust his judgment. But the other part of that question, the first part with, you know, was if he, you know, he noticed that he sat a lot during the game, does that mean his job is safe? I don't think any of those receivers' jobs are safe by any means. I mean, there's still three games to play.
I mean, he did have one catch for like 22 yards, but that was about it for the day.
I'm trying to remember last year, and I feel like a very similar situation like this happened with TJ Jones. I don't think
it was.
Is it true that he did not play any in the fourth preseason game where we were like, oh, I guess he's safe?
Yeah, I don't think he did, because we got so shocked, because then like the next day I thought he got cut, and then he ended up on the practice squad. But yeah, I remember all of us being shocked by that, because it wasn't part of like the shotgun blast that they do when they used to cut the roster from 75 to 53, like immediately.
Yeah.
Because he was like one of the first names that came out. Like it was before like everybody else's names. And I remember all of us kind of being like, what, we thought his job was safe because he didn't play.
Right. So so definitely don't read too much into him being with the ones. It just kind of, it shows you where he's at now. But I definitely think that can change. And like you said, I think this is definitely a job that's still up for grabs. But TJ Jones is in the driver's seat right now.
Okay. John Sims asks us, should we be a little more relaxed on the left tackle position? Robinson didn't look like a turnstile.
It's one game.
That's objectively true that he is not actually a turnstile on, say, the LA Metro or the Detroit People Mover. But... as Ryan just said, it's one game.
It's one game.
I know we're gassing up on Galladay after one game, but it's for all these guys, it's one game.
I mean, but in general, the reports have been getting better and better about Greg Robinson, and I think that's something to be a little bit excited about. You have to realize that I think Kent put this very good during our Facebook Live after the game, our post-game Facebook Live. He said, when you're getting a left tackle this late in the game, you're not going to get a starter level quality guy. You just aren't. And that includes Greg Robinson. Even though he's a second overall pick, he's not going to be a starter quality guy. But I think you saw the ceiling of what he can be. And that's a guy that's not going to make a ton of mistakes, and a guy that's not going to get your quarterback immediately killed. And that's what the Lions are just going to have to deal with. That's what they're going to hope for the first 6 to 8 games of the season. And it's not a completely comfortable position to be in, but it's not, oh my God, panic, the season's over yet.
I mean, let's put things into perspective too. Joe Dahl was the guy that they had working out at left tackle when the Taylor Decker injury happened.
Right.
Fast forward, you know, 2 months or 3 months from now, or from then, if Joe Dahl is still your left tackle, maybe Matthew Stafford would have found his final resting spot in Indianapolis today.
Joseph Blackwell asks us, where are the sacks going to come from?
Santa Claus.
I'll tell you where they're coming from. John Cena!
You just threw up a John Cena on us?
Yes. SummerSlam's coming up.
But he's not, he doesn't have sacks, he's got titties.
Sacks and titties. Sacks and titties.
Oh my god, that's staying in.
Oh, god dang it.
We are horrible people.
We try really, really hard. Can I hear that sultry woman's voice real quick, though?
Yeah. I'm just giving it a second before I shut off the recorder.
Recording off.
God, yes! We actually got it!
Oh, God. That's probably staying in, too.
Good. That way we'll have that tape out there for when my job is just, like, automated voice person.